Radio 3 on 90 to 93 FM, digital radio and online. It's 1 o'clock. Time for the news now, read by David Cornett.
The Libyan leadership has announced that Colonel Gaddafi's son and heir apparent, Saif al-Islam, has been arrested. He was detained near the town of Ubari in southern Libya. The Justice Minister, Mohamed al-Alaji, said he was being flown to the north of the country. Saif Gaddafi has been on the run since his father's regime was overthrown. He is wanted by the International Criminal Court for alleged crimes against humanity. Opposition activists in Syria say there have been new attacks by President Assad's forces hours before an Arab League deadline for Damascus to stop its crackdown on anti-government protesters. Yesterday, Syria agreed in principle to allow an observer mission into the country to oversee a peace deal put forward by the Arab League. European Union officials have agreed to a 2% rise in the region's budget for 2012. The EU budget commissioner, who'd pushed for a 5% increase, said it was an austerity budget, and he expressed concern that the European Commission would run out of funds next year. A man has been arrested on suspicion of attempted murder after three police officers were stabbed in northwest London. A total of four officers were attacked as they tried to speak to a man in the Kingsbury area. The Metropolitan Police Commissioner, Bernard Hogan Howe, expressed concern for the officers involved, two of whom are in a serious condition in hospital. The world of cricket has been remembering the former England international Basil de Oliveira, who's died at the age of 80. He'd suffered from Parkinson's disease. His appearance in the England team caused controversy in 1968 when the apartheid government in his home country of South Africa refused to accept a non-white cricketer, forcing the cancellation of the tour and leading to a ban on sporting ties with South Africa, which lasted until the early 1990s. And the weather, it'll be a mostly dry afternoon with some bright spells, but far western parts will be cloudy with rain in Northern Ireland and western Scotland. Tonight, the rain will spread across northern Scotland, but it'll remain mostly dry with some fog patches returning. BBC News and weather at 1:02.
And that was David Cornett. I'm Jill Anderson. Very good afternoon to you. In an hour's time at 2 o'clock, there's another chance to hear last Monday's Wigmore Hall recital, which was given by the Emerson Quartet. They'll be playing music by Bach, Mozart and Beethoven. The string quartet in C-sharp minor, opus 131, ends that concert and it starts at 2. But right now, it's time for the Early Music Show. Here's Lucy Skeeping.
In the early 17th century, Venice was still the great centre for the most advanced music publishing in Europe. Composers from all over Italy would send their manuscripts to the printing houses that specialised in sacred music. And it was here, in 1623, that a collection of choral music came hot off the press, ready to be delivered back to its composer in Mantua, some 100 miles to the west. It contained 33 psalms and hymns. Nothing unusual about that, you could say, except that these weren't Latin motets for the church, but Hebrew motets for the synagogue, and composed at a time when Jews were required by law to wear on their clothing a yellow badge of shame. The music was the first of its kind. It would remain unique and extremely controversial for more than 200 years, and its composer was Salomone Rossi.
Oh.
ensemble Daedalus, with Salomone Rossi's setting of Borachu et Adonai Hamavorach, the Jewish prayer which calls the congregation to receive God's blessing. The words of the Borachu have been recited since the time of Solomon, when the ancient Holy House, or Beit HaMikdash, stood on the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. Traditionally, the prayer would be chanted by the rabbi and the congregation would respond, which is what made Ross's setting so controversial, because it was composed in the polyphonic style associated with the Christian church. So how did Rossi, a Jewish composer, manage to make a career in a world that was at best suspicious of Jews and at worst openly hostile? Well, we don't know much about his life, but he was fortunate to live in Mantua, because here was a city that not only tolerated Jews but allowed them to mingle freely. It was also a place with a magnificent artistic heritage, particularly from the end of the 15th century, when Isabella d'Este Gonzaga brought in some of Europe's finest musicians to entertain the royal family. By the following century, there was a permanent cappella and a professional ensemble in residence within the castle walls. And by Rossi's time, the Gonzaga Duke was employing some of the greatest masters of the age for banquets, festivities and chapel services. In this humanistic and liberal environment, Jews were able to play a reasonably active part. Some made their names as physicians, classicists and astronomers. Others became playwrights, dancers, actors, composers and court musicians. But standing head and shoulders above all other Jewish musicians of the Renaissance period, and a considerable musical figure in any context, was Salomone Rossi himself, singer, violinist and composer at the court of Mantua for 41 years. two pieces by Salomone Rossi. Sopra l'aria di Ruggiero was performed by Hesperion 21, directed by Jordi Savall. And before that, we heard Les Boreades, directed by Francis Colpron, in Sonata in Diagolo detta la Vienna. Rossi came from an illustrious Jewish family. The de Rossis could trace their ancestry all the way back to the exiles from Jerusalem, carried away to Rome by the Emperor Titus in the year 70. Down the line were biblical scholars and a number of fine musicians, a gene which Salomone evidently inherited, because at the age of 19 he was hired by Duke Vincenzo Gonzaga as a court musician. He was in good company. Gastoldi was there, a composer best known for his popular songs or balletti. And 3 years later, Monteverdi joined them. In fact, it was here, in Mantua, that Monteverdi wrote his third and fourth books of madrigals. Let's hear one of them, Io mi son giovanetta, in which an amorous young shepherd tries his luck with a laughing shepherdess. Io mi son giovanetta from Monteverdi's fourth book of madrigals, beautifully sung there by La Veneziana. Madrigals have certainly come to be associated with Monteverdi, but Salomone Rossi, his fellow musician at the Gonzaga court, also had a hand in their development. His first collection, published in 1596, set romantic verses from some of the greatest poets of the day, and was an instant success with professional singers, amateurs and courtiers alike. But perhaps more importantly, it reveals just how musical style was developing in this period. The first edition shows Rossi still indulging in the polyphonic texture of unaccompanied voices. But in the second, some 4 years later, he tells his readers that some of the madrigals can be sung with chitarrone, a large lute, which he writes should follow the soprano part. The result is a shift of emphasis that gives the top line more importance, a small but significant move towards the Baroque. two madrigals from Salomone Rossi's first book, performed by Ensemble Daedalus, directed by Roberto Festa. For his second book of madrigals, Rossi moved even further towards the Baroque style. Now, instead of a sort of democratic equality between the voices, one part became in effect the tune, the shifting harmonies emphasised by an instrumental basso continuo. And Rossi now began to apply this pioneering style, the Nuove Musica, as it was called, to instrumental music as well, most notably in his collection Sinfonie et Galliarde, published in 1607, which contains what could be dubbed the very first trio sonatas. Siena Ensemble with music by Salomone Rossi, Sinfonia Grave and Galliarda Narciso. Rossi worked at the Gonzaga court from the 1580s until his death and produced many volumes of songs, dances and concert music. But as far as history is concerned, his greatest achievement wasn't anything composed for his noble patrons, but for his own community. The first and only collection of polyphonic synagogue music written before the 19th century. He called it the Songs of Solomon, a title in keeping with the long Jewish tradition of name puns. The text, though, was nothing to do with the erotic book of the Bible, but Jewish psalms, hymns and prayers. And what made it so groundbreaking, even shocking to many, was the way he set these words to music. You see, for some 2,000 years, synagogue prayers have stuck to ancient tradition. They were chanted, no new melodies were allowed, and certainly no harmonisation or instrumental accompaniment. But the Jews of Renaissance Italy were now beginning to develop a taste for the Western style of music, of the kind heard in the Christian church. And it was beginning to infiltrate the synagogues. Padua and Ferrara now had choirs. In Modena, there was an organ. In Venice, a complete orchestra. Many of the community were horrified and declared that harmony was sinful. There were even stories of services being disrupted. Undoubtedly, Rossi had been influenced by the music he heard around him, especially at the Gonzaga court. He would probably have also been aware of some of the reforms of the Council of Trent, which sought to encourage composers to write Catholic church music in a more accessible form. In an attempt to pacify his detractors, he explained his motive in the preface. "The Lord has been my strength," he wrote, "and he has put new songs into my mouth. I wove these into an arrangement of sweet sounds for holy festivals. I shaped them into proper harmonic form so that they would have greater stature for discriminating ears." But his most likely ally in this daring experiment was Rabbi Leo of Modena, who ran a music academy in Venice. "I do not see how anyone with a brain in his skull should cast any doubt on the propriety of praising God in song," wrote the rabbi. "Indeed, the musical art awakens the soul to God's glory."
Thank you.
Two Hebrew settings by Salomone Rossi, Psalm 128, and before that a text from Isaiah. The performers there were New York Baroque, directed by Eric Milnes. Whatever was Rossi's inspiration, the task of actually writing down his music needed some serious thought. The point is, Hebrew reads from right to left, whilst European musical notation, of course, reads from left to right. There was simply no tradition of how to print art music with Hebrew words. So Rossi decided to write each word reading from right to left underneath the notes. He also respected the rule that traditionally banned instruments from the synagogue as a sign of mourning for the destruction of the temple, and he set his songs for unaccompanied voices. What's more, in one of the earliest attempts at copyright, the publication includes a rabbinical curse on anyone who might attempt to pirate it. Mind you, with so much opposition to what was seen as Christian-style music, we can't be sure whether the Songs of Solomon were ever, in fact, performed in synagogue at all. They may have been sung at special ceremonies, at weddings, or perhaps informally by amateurs. But the fact is, they never really caught on until the reforms of the 19th century, that is. Rossi was truly ahead of his time.
See you.
Three pieces from the Songs of Solomon, Hebrew psalms, prayers and hymns set by the Italian Renaissance composer Salomone Rossi. Rossi must have been well regarded by the Mantuan authorities because in recognition of his talent, he was exempted from wearing the compulsory Jewish yellow badge. Nevertheless, he still very much identified with his heritage, proudly signing all his works Salomone Rossi Ebreo, which ultimately may be why, despite dedicating so many pieces to the Gonzagas, he doesn't seem to have actually ever been a permanent member of the court. Let's hear two more madrigals, this time from Rossi's second book. I am happy to die at your command, but how can I die if I have never lived? Poiché mori dicesti is the second of the two, performed by the Siena Ensemble. But first, vo fuggir lontan da te, I want to run far away from you.
Fuggir lontan, fuggir, non andare lontan.
two madrigals by Salomone Rossi from his collection published in 1628. And that is the last we hear of him. We don't know when or how Rossi died, but Mantua's Jewish ghetto was sacked and burned 2 years later, and he may have lost his life then. We've just time for a final piece from his groundbreaking Songs of Solomon, and perhaps it's a fitting song to end with, as it's to be sung during one of the most important moments in the Italian synagogue service, the ceremony of Galilah, the rolling and covering of the Torah scroll. This is New York Baroque again. O God, restore us and cause your face to shine, and we shall be saved.
New York Baroque was directed by Eric Milnes in Elohim Hashivenu, one of the Songs of Solomon, composed by Salomone Rossi. And that ends today's Early Music Show. It was presented by Lucy Skeeping and produced in Manchester by Sam Phillips. And don't forget the weekly Early Music Show podcast. Full details are on the Radio 3 website. Now here's Sarah Moore Peach with a word about this evening.
The Huddersfield Contemporary Music Festival really is the highlight of the year for new music and for Radio 3's Here and Now. Every November, we make the pilgrimage to Huddersfield, which is usually pretty cold and wet, but the music is fantastically exciting. Everything you hear there is new. It's also a wonderful melting pot for composers and performers to come together, meet up and discuss ideas. This year, I'm really excited that we're going to be broadcasting a live concert from the opening weekend of the festival. And there's just one piece of music on the programme, a fantastically epic work called Construction by Richard Barrett that's never been heard before. Richard Barrett's not the only composer you'll be hearing on our Here and Now coverage of Huddersfield. Throughout December, I'll be joining Robert Warby to present highlights. So join me live tonight in Huddersfield at 10:30 here on BBC Radio 3.
And this afternoon, in an hour's time, at 3 o'clock in Saturday Classics, Simon Russell Beale further explores music connected to some of the cities he visited in BBC4's Symphony series. He continues today with St. Petersburg. Glinka, Rachmaninoff and Prokofiev are among the composers who lived, wrote in or travelled to the city. Saturday Classics at 3 o'clock. But now it's time for the Radio 3 Lunchtime Concert and a second chance to hear last Monday's live broadcast from Wigmore Hall in London. It's introduced by Louise Fryer.
Well, it's absolutely packed here today. This concert has been sold out for weeks. It features the Emerson Quartet, who've notched up an unparalleled list of achievements since they were formed in 1976. More than 30 acclaimed recordings, 9 Grammy Awards, 3 Gramophone Awards, the coveted Avery Fisher Prize, and they've recorded cycles of the complete Beethoven, Bartok, Mendelssohn and Shostakovich string quartets. They end today's lunchtime concert with Beethoven's great C-sharp minor quartet, Opus 131, in which he really pushed the boundaries of the quartet genre further than ever before. And it shows the influence of Bach, incorporating fugal elements from Bach's well-tempered clavier. Beethoven copied out a couple of Bach fugues when he was still a child in Bonn, after his teacher, Christian Gottlob Neefer, introduced him to Bach's music. Neefer was so impressed by the 13-year-old Beethoven's abilities, he wrote, "If he continues like this, he'll be the new Mozart." And Mozart, too, was inspired by Bach, although at a slightly older age than Beethoven. Mozart was in his mid-20s when he first arrived in Vienna in 1781 and seems to have come across Bach's music courtesy of Baron van Swieten, director of the city's Imperial Library, a man who'd like to arrange musical gatherings on a Sunday morning. The Emersons begin their concert coupling Mozart's arrangement of one of Bach's fugues with his own personal response to the style, his Adagio and Fugue in C minor. It began life as a fugue for keyboard duet, one of a cluster of pieces Mozart wrote when he first arrived in Vienna. 7 years later, when his fortunes were in decline, he arranged the fugue for string quartet and added an Adagio to help generate some much-needed income. We'll hear that piece after Mozart's arrangement of Bach's Fugue in E from the well-tempered clavier. And here to play it, violinists Philip Zetzer and Eugene Drucker, viola player Lawrence Dutton and cellist David Finkel, the Emerson Quartet.